keep it. If you throw it away, then you'll have to get something new. So I don't think all children were learned that you had to, keep things.
Well, I meant maybe they have to learn to get along in the cold and so on,
Yes, I guess they.
but I never heard of it before.
Is that right? Well, we were brought up so much in a bush, and my dad has brought we he brought us up the old-fashioned way, really, where teaching us to hunt when we were so young and trapping and that, where maybe it was just something for us to do, being in a bush or something like that. But he brought us up more the old-fashioned way. Usually, kids out in the bush, they stay home with their mother, and just the dad does the as even now. Like Henry, Elizabeth says his Henry never takes the kids out
You mean Henry Cardinal?
Never takes the children out and try to teach them anything, never. Even
Well, he's mainly a trapper, isn't he?
yes.
Yes.
And his kids are in school mostly?
No, they're at the age where they start learning now. They're not yet ready for school, but when he goes out in the bush, they're at the age where he can start teaching them to make their own make their own campfires and set their own snares, showing them things even if they can't do it yet. Where we learned when we were young, to do these little chores. And James believes in doing that with the children too, because next year when we get out in the bush, he's going to start taking Carol on trap lines, and she'll only be three. And he says he's going to start teaching her the way of hard life and, sort of thing.
Does he explain it as likely to be useful when Carol grows up?
Well, he
Or is it
said,
just more or less for play?
he says it may come useful because he says Carol might end up marrying a trapper, and if she learned when she's young, then, if they got married and should have no children, or if they got married and didn't have children for a while, then obviously she wouldn't want to be staying home all the time, and yet she wouldn't enjoy it going out with her husband, if she didn't know anything. Where she'd enjoy it very much, and she'd be able to help him if she knew what to do. So he figures then it'll sort of help her, and she shouldn't forget her native way.
What do you think about that?
Well, I have no hesitation to it because, like now, if my dad didn't teach me all these things, I wouldn't enjoy going out with him. Where if James said he was even going to the fishnet, and can I go? Like last night, he was going to go out and look at the fishnet, and I wanted to go, and he says it's too cold though for the baby. Well, I said I can get a babysitter in, and someone can look after her, and we can go out together. So we did, and it was cold, but mind you, I enjoyed it just to go out and help him. I mean, I while he's looking at the net, I steer the boat for a while, and then I looked at some of the nets with him. So that sort of thing you enjoy and you like, and you know what to do.
I mean about the possibility that Carol will find it useful to learn these things. What do you think about that?
She may and she may not.
You see it as a possibility too.
There is. I mean, like I said, she may end up having this living a trapper's life, if she married a trapper, and then if she didn't, well, then at least she can say that she knew what it was like to be out in the bush and trapping. So I consider it both ways. If she's going to marry a trapper, then she at least would know enough what to do. And if she wasn't married to a trapper, if she left the country or something like that, then she can say that she knew. I mean, I think I'd be sort of ashamed if I said, well, I don't know anything about the bush, but I was raised up in a bush, It wouldn't, like, for language, we were supposed to be Indians or whatever we consider ourselves, and yet, we don't know how to speak anything where our grandmother speaks Cree.
Oh, well, you mean now you and your brothers?
And yet, I can sit with people and, I wouldn't know how to speak Lucia, I wouldn't know how to speak Cree, I wouldn't know how to speak anything except the English. And it's sort of, people get a shock when they ask you, do you know how to speak Lushu? Like now they ask me that because I'm married to a Lushu. And I said, no, James doesn't teach me, And, oh, he doesn't? Gee, when I first married my husband, I learned how to speak his language. That sort of thing sort of, you know, makes you feel funny. So I figured then if I had to go around telling the people, it'll even sound worse if I had to go around telling people, well, I don't know anything about the bush, because even if I was brought up there, I never learned, you know. But not like this way, at least I can say, well, I know how to trap and that.
What you're saying is an experience with her, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm. It is.
When she grows up,
well,
it may be a different kind of
sure.
place around her.
It may be, you know, by the time she's finished school and that sort of thing, she may be a city and there'd be no such thing as trapping. But at least she can look back and say, well, I knew what trapping was like because my dad took me out trapping when I was younger, and I learned from there. My parents are both trappers, you know. She can look back and say that, where if she didn't learn anything, then she'd say, yes, my dad was a trapper, but I didn't get out and see anything like that.
Does James try to teach her to shoot, too?
No, he doesn't speak and you know, doesn't know how to speak good enough to teach us.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he speak it at home?
No, he didn't. You see, his mother was in school most of her life. Mind you, she speaks Lushu, French, Slavey, and I think a little bit of Eskimo. But, you know, she can speak so many languages that she didn't bother speaking to the kids. He'd understand. He understands Lucia very good, but and he can talk a little bit, but not good enough to teach, he says. But she teaches Carol Lucia. My mother-in-law teaches Carol Lucia. You know, most of the words she'll say in Lucia, and Carol pick it up, and I don't understand it, and I usually ask her, you know, what she's saying, and she'd tell me, and sometimes I you know, say it to her, so she wouldn't forget, and she knows what they mean. Where with Eskimo, it's the same thing, because when Mabel Pokiet, Paul Lumsden's girlfriend, was staying with us, she was teaching her little girl Eskimo, and she talked in Eskimo a lot to the little girl, and Carol was running around picking up everything, you know, and I told Mabel one day, well, if you're going to teach Marilyn Eskimo, then you just as well teach Eskimo to Carol. So Carol was walking around talking Eskimo too. You know, and I if Mabel had stayed longer, then I'd have, you know, tried to take on Eskimo too, but she didn't stay long enough for me to start speaking.
Did Mabel do that self-consciously, with the idea that it was good, like James is teaching the one to take Carol out because he thinks it's good to have this experience? Did Mabel do this with the idea?
I think so, because she used to tell me that if Marilyn learn to speak her language, she'll have no trouble picking up other languages. It'll be easier. Where if you only learned how to speak the English language, then it's harder to pick up any other language.
Language mean like French, German?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she used to tell me it'll do Marilyn good, you know. And furthermore, she said Marilyn may never want to, you know, Marilyn, as she grows up, she may want to leave, even if she's been in school all her life outside, she may want to return back to the north and live with, you know, with her relatives and that sort of thing. And then she said, well, there, she's got her Eskimo language. Mind you, by the time Marilyn gets down here, she said that most of the people would be speaking English, but there'd still be odd ones where they wouldn't speak English, and Marilyn would feel out of place, you know, visiting them and not knowing what to say to them, because they don't speak English and she don't speak Eskimo. So Mabel had the idea of bringing her children up in one, you know, the Eskimo language, and she said she was going to teach all of them Eskimo. As a matter of fact, when she was leaving here, she was teaching Paul Eskimo.
Do you know of any Lushu who have that attitude and try to do this with their children?
No, I don't.
You know some Lushu speaking people, do you not?
Yes, I do, but everybody, you know, like Elizabeth, I'm sure she knows how to speak her language, but she's ashamed of it or something, and she tries to hide it. She might not with a white, but with a native, she, you know, she lets on she doesn't know how to speak her language. And I often tell her if I was her, I'd be real proud to speak a language, because I said I feel out of place not speaking the Cree, and we're mostly Crees. And my grandmother, you know, it's not as if I could say that, well, I don't know how to speak my language, because, you know, nobody taught, or, I mean, nobody was speaking it. But where my grandmother, when I was growing up, didn't speak English, and even now she doesn't speak it very good, and so I can't just say that, you know, it was not known to, we didn't know anything in Cree, and my dad can speak a little Cree, but he taught us a few words, you know, in Cree, but that was about it. I don't think he could speak it that good that he can, you know, really teach us either.
Is it your impression that the Eskimo are more concerned with, with language and culture?
I think the Eskimos is more concerned with their language, because it's in a home, it's used in a home. Mm-hmm. And they're very proud of their language. They're very proud, and I've come to see most of the Eskimos, you know, using it in their home with their children, and their as a matter of fact, a few weeks ago, I read in a drum, this Eskimo mother was very disappointed because her child forgot his language. You know, she told him to do something, and he was doing the opposite or something like that. And, you know, and told him again, and she had, in the end, she had to explain, and she was very disappointed, and she said she didn't like the idea, you know, that they were brought up with the Eskimo language. Her and her husband speaks it, then the kid should speak it. Mind you, she can speak in English, but she still considers the kid should speak the language. So I think the Eskimos are more, you know, proud of their language, and another one is, I don't know if it's they're proud of it or it's just that, but the slaveys, I've known the slaveys to speak more of it. In the hostel, it's the same thing. They all can speak English and they speak English perfect, but they wouldn't, if they got together among the hostel kids got together, with, you know, being slaveys, they'd speak it. You wouldn't hear them speaking English.
These are the children from Norman and Good Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do the Eskimo kids do that too in the
hostel? Well, we don't mix. RC don't have so many Eskimos where they don't, you know, be able to speak it. But in town, I've noticed a lot of them don't, among the family, they don't speak English. It's not that they can't speak it.
The Eskimos.
They usually spoke the Eskimo language, where Mabel, you know, being an RN and everything, when we had company over to the house, and if they were to see her, if I wasn't sitting there, she'd speak straight Eskimo to them. But if I'm, you know, sitting there, then I guess she, knowing that I'd feel out of place, would speak English. But a lot of times, you know, if I was leaving the house and someone would come in speaking Eskimo, she'd start right out in Eskimo instead of, you know, speaking in English. She'd talk right off in Eskimo. So I think the Eskimos are more proud of their language than the Lushus, where you don't hear very many of the Lushus speak the Lushu language unless they have to.
Somebody from a settlement, you mean, who doesn't know any English?
Yes.
Yeah.
And who couldn't speak very good English enough to, you know, where, like, even in my home with James, there's some people come to visit us, and they don't speak too good English, and yet they would talk to James and Lushu, and James would answer them in English, and I'd give him a shove, you know. Why don't you talk to them in Lushu, you know? Because you talk it, and you don't have to think that I'd start getting ideas or anything, so he'd start. Maybe it's the idea that he figures that I'm more sort of on a white side or something like that, and I didn't like the idea of people talking Lushu. But I'd be proud if my husband would go ahead and talk his language in my home with his friends. And I always told him, you know, go ahead and speak Lushu if they can't understand it, understand English good enough to talk to you. Or, you know, a lot of times he would end up talking broken English to them, you know, because they couldn't talk. Instead of saying good conversation, he asked them if you'd like to have tea, instead of saying, would you like to have a cup of tea, he'd say, tea, you know, you want a cup of tea? Sort of like that. Well, I'd tell him, go ahead and speak in Lushu to them, because it's hard for them. And I think you should. It's your language. So he'd start off in Lushu to them, and he wouldn't say very much. You know, to cut down on his. It's either he doesn't know enough to speak it, or he's shy of it. I don't know. But I've noticed the Lushus to be like that. You know, there's.
Maybe they're in the process. Changing over to English.
Yes, I think that's what it is.
Not yet. I'm just maybe.
I think it is me. Either it's that or for Arctic Red in a way. You know, because I've been there and I've a lot of very few of the younger people talk the Lushu. They understand it and they can talk it, but they wouldn't talk it unless they had to.
Does the priest there talk it?
Yes, he did. And he would talk, you know, to the people, and a lot of times like in church, if he figured there was too many that didn't understand him enough, then he'd start out in Lushu and in English. And yet the younger people wouldn't talk it unless they had to, you know. And when I first went up there, you know, not speaking Lushu, and I went to visit, I'd visit my girlfriend, and then she'd suggest we go down here and visit this person, you know, and we'd go down there and visit. And I'd tell her before going, could you translate? And she said, yeah. I says, you want to translate for me then? You know, and she says, okay. She's not that interested in translating, you know, and she'd sit there and I'd tell her something, you know, and she'd tell this woman, and this woman would translate back, and then I'd, you know, instead of saying the exact word, she'd just say, oh, she said this, you know.
We've had much the same experience.
Mm-hmm. But you'd think they would be very proud and they'd speak up their language and that, but where I see they don't seem to be that proud of it. Where the Eskimos, Mabel translated a couple of times from a couple of people from down to Tuck, you know. Like her dad, I think he speaks perfect English, but he just speaks mostly his language. And when she introduced me to him, you know, we talked a lot together and he understood what I said, but some things she said maybe be better if I translate. And she sat there translating for us, and yet she got into the conversation. And she wasn't shy. She offered it. You know, he spoke English, but she just said, yeah. Do you want me to translate? Be better? Maybe he'd get at it better. I said, well, if you want to translate for me, it'd be just as good, you know. So we made our conversation that evening by translation. And yet she didn't, she went right down to word to word, and she wasn't shy about it. For the Indians, I don't know, some of them, it's pretty hard to get them to speak it. And like I said, Elizabeth, for example, she lets on she doesn't know how to speak it, you know. Maybe if she was with someone.
Because she's not really Indian, is she?
No, well, the kids were all raised up. The mother knows how to speak Lushu. The father knows how to speak Lushu. Yes.
Yeah.
They all knew how to speak Lushu, and they were raised up right in
they spoke it in the household.
Yes, they did. They spoke the Lushu in the household when the kids were small. And Mary said they did, you know. She knew how to speak English. Mind you, some words she wouldn't know very good yet. And Noel knew how to speak Lushu, and they spoke it. But I don't know how the rest of the kids, mind you, the younger ones, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't know how, because they probably were in school and that sort of thing, the ones that are in their early teens. But Lazarus isn't shy. He speaks his Lushu language. And John can speak his Lushu language. I don't see how Elizabeth couldn't, because she's the oldest, you know, and yet she wouldn't speak it. And sometimes I've caught her. A couple of times she'd have, you know, an old Indian woman over to the house, and I've caught her speaking it. And as soon as I walked in, she'd shut up, you know. And yet I used to tell her, Liz, you could speak. She's so a little bit, not very much, one or few words, you know. And I'd say, gee, if I was you, you're so lucky, you know. I wish I can speak some kind of language. And yet she just wouldn't. She's shy. I don't know. Maybe it's shyness, or they're now that they're adapting the white man's way, they just, you know, trying to forget their language or something. But I don't know what it is. But it's only with the Lushus I've seen this. I haven't seen it with the slaveys, because I've mixed up with enough.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I went with a slavey boy, and he was very proud to talk about his language when we were in school. And And he used to, you know, give me a few words. That was the boy that I told you I was dating when we were in school. And he was from up the river from, you know, Fort Norman. And he spoke his language, and he used to speak it. If he met other children, he'd speak it in front of me, and then he'd tell me what he said all in his language. And he used to tell me a few words and ask me if I can pronounce them, you know. And the kids would get, if they got together, you'd hear them just speaking straight slave. You wouldn't think they'd understand, you know, spoke English. But yet, even as a matter of fact, when I first met him, I didn't know if he spoke real good English or not, you know. And I you know, sort of didn't know if I should try to speak to him in broken English or in good, you know, in perfect English. But he told me that, you know, his mom and dad doesn't speak English unless they have to. And yet he said they speak good English, but it's just in a family they use the slavey. It's the same with all slaveys up that way. Most of the kids say the same thing. My mom and dad doesn't speak unless they have to. And right now we've got a woman from Arctic Red staying next door. She just came in for holidays, like, and the girls are in a hostel, and they brought their white friends down there, their girlfriends, and their mother doesn't speak too good English, but she understands. And yet I go over there, and I'd be sitting with the mother, and, you know, we know each other, be sitting visiting, and the girls would come in with their white friends, and they'd start right out in slavey.
Where did she come from?
She's from Good Hope, but she's now moved to Arctic Red. Her husband's a special constable, Joe Mazzazumi, and the girls.
Oh, yeah, I know the name.
Mm-hmm. And the girls are in...
Pauline?
Mm-hmm, Pauline.
Is she the family that lives, or is she the one that's from Arctic Red?
Pauline?
Yes.
Yes.
She's the one that lives in the house next to you.
Well, they're on holidays, like, and they're just staying in the house next to me for now, you know, just for a few days. And that's, I mean, that's the tent that we had before. They're staying in there now. The one before we moved out of our house, just below our house, a little tent. It's a little black tent anyway, and, you know, that was ours before we had this house, and then we sold it to them last summer because they had no place to stay, and the father asked us if he can buy it, you know.
So they keep it here as a house,
mm-hmm.
as a house to which they can come up here to visit. Is that mm-hmm. what you mean? When
mm-hmm.
they're away, it's locked up.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ask is because we've been very puzzled whether the Mazzazumis live here or don't live here.
No, they don't. And they come every summer. They come for about 3 weeks, and instead of staying in a hostel or renting a place, they have this place.
Mm-hmm.
That explains that.
Mm-hmm. And we usually look after it. You know, being in town, Joe leaves the keys with us, and he always asks us to look it up, you know, now and then, and don't let people break in, or if someone that we figure can look after it right, then stay in it when he's gone. But they don't, you know, they don't stay here permanently. And the girls, like I said, they'd come in a house and start off right in slavey. You know, their friends, the whites, are there, and then they turn around and tell what they said. And I've seen them do it. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was sitting with their mother, and the girls came in with two white girls from the apartments, and they talked slavey. Their dad speaks perfect English. There's no hesitation with English there, and he speaks perfect slavey. So, you know, it's not as if they could, and the mother understands English, so it's not as if they couldn't speak English, but yet they spoke it.
It's an interesting thing that you're saying about bringing girls from the other end of town down, their white friends. Does the school promote much friendship of that kind?
Yes, I think it does, because a girl from my Arctic Red, I think, I'm not sure, had even invited a white friend up to Arctic Red for the Easter holidays, and they stayed across there with her parents. You know, she had brought a friend on a plane to Arctic Red, and she stayed with them. So I think it does, you know. Mm.
More than when you went to school, do you think?
Mm.
Or was it already going on then?
It was going on then. We'd mixed up. I had a...
Well, that's true. You told us about your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. I had a white boyfriend, and I used to, as a matter of fact, on weekends, I used to go over to a girlfriend, a Veach, her name was, And I used to go over there and spend.
Yeah.
Mhm. Go over to the apartments and spend the weekend, the day over there, or maybe once I spent the whole weekend over with her, camped overnight with her and go back to the hostel after the weekend was over. So we did that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was Florence related to in the house next to yours? Is she related to something?
Florence who?
Well, I don't know. She's Mabel's half-sister. I don't know what her name is, and she's going with a white boy.
Oh.
She's in the hospital.
She, Florence is related to them is by John and Rosie Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John Pascal is Pascal Baptiste's son.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosie is Florence, that's Florence's mother.
Yeah.
From her first marriage, she had Florence, and then she married to John. And sort of their, well, her grandfather and
she was married twice, and the first husband is Florence's father.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying?
Rosie, this is.
Mm-hmm.
Rosie Pascal.
Yes. His name was Anakina. I don't know the first name, but
the first husband.
Mm-hmm. His last name was Anakina.
So he was Esperon?
Yes, mm-hmm. From Tuck. That's Mabel's sister.
Who is?
Rosie, their sister.
Oh, Rosie is Mabel's.
Mm-hmm.
Rosie is Mabel's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So Rosie is a Pokiak.
Yes, she is.
I knew there was something.
And her present husband? What is his name?
This one here?
Yes.
John
name?
Pascal.
Of course, Pascal's got the name Pascal. Yeah.
And he's the son of Baptiste Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a Indian, an Eskimo.
A pure
who's married to an Indian.
Pure-blooded Eskimo married to a pure-blooded Indian. And their kids are just beautiful.
Yeah, Florence is lovely.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a real Eskimo.
Yeah,
man.
She's nice.
But the John's and Rosie's children are really beautiful. Yeah. They there's one of them's got the Eskimo futures, very much the Eskimo futures. The other one's got very much the Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And John says the Eskimo one is his. And the Indian one is Rosie's one, so they sort of switch babies.
Depends on which gene comes out. Can we go back to children for what time remains? Oh, we've got 5 or 10 minutes. You like to see, I know she's young again, and always had to apologize
Carol.
To this, Carol. When she's playing with other children, the little that she plays with other children, do you like her to take a role of being a leader-like, of telling the other children what to do?
No, I consider that bossy. She does now. She's at the stage where she gets very bossy. You play with this and I'll play with that. Come on, let's go out and play out here. Or, I want to play in a house. Are you coming with me? Well, I don't go for that, I usually tell her, you got to share, and you got to learn, to mix with children. So if I caught her doing that, I'd tell her, Carol, don't you think it's the little girl's chance to choose now? If she want to go out and play on a swing, then she can play on a swing. She wants to come in and play in the house, then she plays in the house with you. But I said, I don't think that you should be the one that tell her, you do this and do that, Like, even I've noticed her with Donna, and Donna's 6. Donna probably wouldn't say anything because if I'm there, she figures I might stick up for Carol. But I still don't, think that she should go around telling the kids where she should play and where they should play. And
you said she's at the age now, and that suggests that you think children are like that at a certain age, but outgrow it?
I don't know. Some people tells me that children will outgrow it.
And that this is normal in children?
Mm-hmm. They said they get to a bossy stage and they get to own it all stage and, sort of things.
Did Indian or Eskimo tell you this or white?
Both. My mother-in-law has told me, I told her, once or twice I've mentioned Carol being so bossy, Oh, she says she'll grow out of it. And Jean and I, Jean Kapuk, Elias Vuganis, girlfriend, they stay down there, and she was telling me that, you know, her little girl was like that, and she grew out of it. And she says, you don't have to worry, she'll grow out of it. She said they wouldn't stay like that long because she says, my little girl was like that, and she grew out of it, so most likely Carol will be like that for a while, and she'll grow. But she says, I keep telling my little girl, you know, cut that out and that sort of thing. And gradually she just, now she plays, you know, very nice with kids. Where Carol, she'd play nice with them, but she'd get down to the stage where she would start bossing, you know, if she got to know them well enough. So I get after her.
Now, by being bossy, do you mean doing this, I don't know how to explain it, doing this too much, or do you think that there's some kind of...
Well, I think by doing it a little too often, you know, because she wants it, well, not too often, more, you know, more, because she always wants her... If she plays with children, if she wants to play out, then she plays out with them. And it's fine and dandy. And usually the children are sort of afraid or they're shy or something, where they wouldn't, the ones that are down there, maybe it's they're too young or something like that, they wouldn't they're not interested in coming in a house so much and making themselves at home. And she always wants, you know, to come in and play in a house with them, or, you know, something. It's the opposite of what they want. If they should want to come in and play in a house, then she'd start screaming and howling that she wants to go out, and then I'd say, well, put your jacket on and go out yourself then, if you want to go out. But no, she had to have them out, and they didn't want to go out. You know, they just finished playing outside all day, and now they want to come in and play in a house. And since Carol having the toys, I guess they'd come over and play with her, and, you know, she'd end up being bossy with them.
Does she ever try to be bossy with adults, with you, for example?
No, not with me. With her dad, a few times, she'd get bossy with him, but never with me.
Would he indulge you? Go along with it?
No, he wouldn't. He'd get right down, you know, and get after her if she tried getting bossy with him, and she never got away with it. So she doesn't try it very often. But kids, she'd do it because she knew she can get away. If she could get away, if I didn't say anything, then she'd do it.
Would it be any different if Carol was a boy and was taking this kind of role, playing this kind of part?
I don't know. Mind you, maybe if it was a boy, then James would get after him more, I think. He always says it was up to me to correct the girls more. And he said that girls should be more like their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he sometimes says he can't understand Carol because she's so rough and tomboy sort of thing, you know. And he says for a little girl, she's quite bossy. And he figured a girl should more like be their mother. But he said a boy, he says, where he's not too surprised of it because a boy is usually rough, but he said he'd get after a boy more if he had a son that was like that, you know.
Do you remember him behaving like that when you were a child?
Well, it was always mom look after the girls and dad look after the boys.
I mean bossiness, as you call it.
No, yes, in a way there was, because George was quite bossy. I remember he was boss of everything, the traps that him and I were to share. He was boss of them. He was boss of the dogs, and I couldn't, you know. And yet it wasn't as if he was put to be boss of them. It was for the both of us, and no one was the boss of it, you know. Dad said, nobody's the boss of these dogs except me, and no fighting over them when he first gave them to us. And the same with the traps. He told us nobody's the boss of them, so it's, you know, we're free to use them between the two of us and no fighting over them. But yet, I remember George, as soon as we got out of Dad's sight, George would say, you're not having the traps, I'm having them, you know, or you could have two if you want them.
But how about directing what was to be done? Does that come under bossiness term?
Yes, well, he would, you know. And maybe it was because of the dogs and traps. Like, if I wanted to go this way, then he said, no, we're not going this way. I want to go this way. And if you want to go that way, you can go alone with nothing. So I pretty well had to go with him because he'd give me no choice. I couldn't possibly go in a bush with no traps or no dogs or anything.
Was this proper for him and your parents?
No, I'd go in and tell Mom, Dad, that George was doing this to me, and Dad would go out there and sort of solve it out, you know. Now you look here, what I said about these dogs and traps, you're not allowed this much, and you know, it's no limit to what you're allowed. But he says you're not going to take the whole thing. You're letting Bella have some as much as she's letting you have some. So they didn't, you know, they didn't let us get away with it. If I had gotten bossy about anything, then he'd go and tell on me too.
Now how about if you have some, he or you have some, something you want to do, you want to get the other to do it also, and you kind of do it in some indirect way, would that be all right? You're setting the plan, but you're not being really bossy. You know what I mean?
Yes, well, it was pretty hard, you know, if we want, like, for my side anyway, because I was, my parents expected me more to be like a ladylike instead of a tomboy, and I was more tomboy, and if I want, you know, ask the children, others, if we can do this sort of thing, like if climbing trees or something, you know, let's go out and climb trees or hook up ropes on a tree and play Tarzan. Well, then the children didn't like it, you know, and I wanted to go and tell Mom. The kids don't want to play with me. Then she'd say, well, what was the game? Well, I told her what. She says, well, I don't blame them, you know. You're supposed to be in a house being more a lady instead of climbing trees and tearing all your clothes up. So what do you expect? You know, at least they have more brains than you. So that sort of thing, even if I wasn't bossy about, but yet if they didn't want to go with me, Mom, so for that part anyway, tomboy side, I didn't have very much choice because Mom and Dad more expected me to be a lady instead of a tomboy.
Can you ever remember getting your way?
Oh, there was at times, you know, if I wanted something like to do and Mom figured then it wasn't so bad that the others couldn't do it, so then she'd tell them, you know, I think that you should go along with Bella once in a while. You're always sort of leaving her out or something like that, or you never want to do things she wants. Why don't you do it for a change, you know? So that was about all. There was a time when I'd get my way.
So you could have helped with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we ought to... It's 5:30 already, believe it or not.
Oh, my.
I keep forgetting about these little things.
Oh, that's different from the one you have at the house, isn't it?
It's a portable one. I thought maybe we could ask you some questions about children again all of a sudden. Do you or have you heard of... people saying, Indians saying, that children go through stages as they grow up? Periods in which their behavior changes or something?
Really, I haven't, you know, heard anybody saying something like that. But mind you, I go through saying that myself, like...
I got the idea from you.
You know, Carol, for example, like even with the baby, she was quite fussy and she wanted to be act as a baby when the baby first came home, and James was kind of confused about it, and I just said, well, she's just going through a stage of being so, unsure of herself at the moment with a baby in the house, and, there is certain things, like before I went to the hospital even, she was so miserable and upset, and I figured it was just the stage of she didn't know where she stood at the moment because I was coming and going all the time, and, being away just made her feel miserable. And I figured it was just a stage where she'll get out of sooner or later, which she has now. She's back to her normal again.
I think I also mean bigger stages. For example, in English we have baby, we have infant, moving into child, moving into teenager or adolescent?
Well, I haven't, you know, really thought of that because, I mean, yet there is, like, some of my girlfriends even would say, you know, this certain girl is going into her stage of teenager. And, you know, last year I seen her, she's just a little squirt, and she's now, look where she stands, you know. Well, I hear things like that, but really, I don't think people really take too much consideration to it.
You didn't ever hear your mother talk about those things, stages in life, periods of growth?
No, she hasn't mentioned. That's one thing that I haven't heard. Even around here, with the people around here, I haven't heard them talking about the stages of growing.
But they use the word teenager around here, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do. I mean, obviously, you know, a young girl to her 20s is a teenager around here. But they don't make too much of it or anything like that.
Sometimes people have these stages in their own language. And then children in the bush. Do you think that when children of 12, 13 or so go into the bush, that they enjoy themselves, or that they might be lonely and bored, missing Inuvik? Have you any experience?
Well, my parents always take out children every summer, you know, like as their friends as children, or my sisters and brothers are friends. And like this weekend, we're having my sister Mary being lonesome and all alone now that she's in a bush with my parents. And well, there's Albert, a younger one, but he's a boy and he's got different things to cope with, and she's sort of lonesome, I guess. And Mom had, you know, said she can have a friend out with her that'll look after a friend, and so she is taking someone out with her.
Mary.
Yes, I know they do get lonesome, because when we were, as we grew into our teens, we started spending some time in a bush in the holidays, summer holidays, and it was lonesome. Mind you, we came to town every weekend or every couple of days, but it was a lonesome, even if we had all our family with us or friends.
Any particular things you missed or thought you missed?
Well, we were in our teens, like Betty and I were growing, and we started dating, and you know, all the advertisements on the radio for children, fun, and for the teenagers, there's a dance here or that sort of thing. Well, then we felt bad because we knew we were missing out on this dance or this certain thing, and mine, I know, even Mom figured we must have been lonesome, because if Dad said, well, we're going to town, and so that if you girls wanted to go to the dance, then fine and dandy, you can go. And, you know, Mom realized it herself. We'd get all excited and start looking for our best dress clothes and what we were to wear before we were even in town. So really, deep down, I don't think Betty really noticed that she was lonesome. But we were, for our own friends, like, we had a couple of friends out, but I don't think they enjoyed it too, because they got lonesome.
Excuse me, how old are we talking
about?
Well,
we were, Betty, I was 15 then, and Betty was she must have been about 13, 12. So she, you know, we were about the age where we chummed around then more together.
This was in the summertime?
Yes.
And the friends that you had out, were they the same age?
Yes, they were the same age. They were more teenagers from the apartments or there was very few, because since we were in a hostel, we didn't mix up with town children.
Yeah.
Mind you, the apartments, because they were in our classroom, and more of our friends were from different settlements, and the only way we can keep contact was by corresponding through the holidays. So I guess even when we were in town, it wasn't that enjoyable, because we didn't mix up with the town children of the this side anyway.
You mean that you took children from the apartments, white children, out to the bush?
Well, we had one with us.
What was the experience like? You know?
It was a boy, and he liked it. You know, he said his dad always wanted him to go out in the bush. And he enjoyed it very much. It was something new for him, like fishing the net and playing sail. We used to go out in a boat and hook up a sail and, you know, float down a river playing pirates and swimming. We had swimming and hiking. We had, most of the things were, you know, bush, like, they might as well say in guides, sort of a training, more than anything, more than a play. Like hiking, we, excuse me.
Can I just hear you mention the word guides?
Yeah, well,
are you a guide?
Yes, I was. And, well, the things we did, I figured were more like in guides, because hiking, it's a, you know, a fun sort of thing, but mind you, the walking we did weren't that much fun when we got home and we're tired, you know. So I think it was more like with wildlife than anything else. And that was about all I can remember us doing.
How many years were you a guide? Girl guide.
I think it was just about 2.5 years.
And what was it like?
Well, I enjoyed it very well. I was brownie before I became a guide, and from there I went into the guiding, and I enjoyed it very much. You know, I like the wildlife, studying about the animals, and I, mind you, I didn't care very much for this woman crap with knitting and that sort of thing.
You did that too?
Yes, we did that. We had to learn how to mend, knit, sew buttons, and they were certain tests that we had to pass with these things, and I didn't enjoy that too much, but I liked the idea of going out and hiking and following trails and camping and learning to make your own campfires and that. So mind you, I did very good, because the last year I was in guides, I think two tests away from my commanding, and then I can take over a troop myself. But by the time the year came up, then it was time to go home, so I figured I'd join them the next year, and then I can take my training in Edmonton with the girl guides. But I didn't get around to doing it. I mean, I went back to school and found out that I wasn't interested in the guides any longer, so I just dropped off and never bothered going back to them.
Suddenly lost interest.
Yes, I did.
You must have been advantaged in the guides with an Indian background. Knowing some of the things.
Well, if I can't say, really, I don't know, you know, I didn't realize it or anything. Because we were all Indians, most of us. There was a few white children, and the commanders were all whites. So, you know, one thing I can say, being in the bush so much, nobody can fool me from tracks. And I did real good in my tracks, animal tracks. You know, I mean, nobody can say this was a squirrel track when it was a rabbit track sort of thing. And my tests were very easy, a lot of them. And campfire was another thing that, you know, I didn't really need a test for campfire.
Did you have to blow the fire according
to the book? Well, we had to, with two matches. And, you know, a lot of kids, they I guess they never grew up in a bush and not knowing how to build a campfire, where I could, you know, just go and look for dry spruce boughs, and I knew it'll burn, or birch will burn very quick. So
birch what?
These dry birches.
Bark?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I knew they'll burn quick, and so I just went and looked for that.
We have photographs from Frobisher Bay of Eskimo girls making a fire. They had a devil of a time. They had to use kindling, sticks of kindling, specially cut, piled in a kind of a
Well, we had two tests. One was to make fire with one match on our own, and another one was to try and make it with just two matches with the kindling. That one, mind you, was kind of hard, you know, because I don't think the wood that they had was, I don't think was very good for a fire. But the one with just one match, it was, you know, it was very easy for us if there was no wind. And mind you, we didn't have to do it in one day. We could have done it, you know, any time that we figured we can do it, we'd go out and
wait for a day without wind.
Mm-hmm. So there was a few things where I passed with no trouble, you know, it went very easy for me.
What do you remember about the drills and the rituals of the guides.
What do you mean?
Don't they have, didn't they have drills in which you salute and pledge?
Oh, yes. Well, we had, I remember to start out the guide, opening up the guide meetings, we had to march into a horseshoe formation. And, well, we call that the call a party.
Call a party.
Yeah. And the flags were, you know, raised at the time. And then we usually had this guides, was it the guide song? Or no, I think it was the O Canada. And then we had the, we can, what was it? We went off into our packs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after this, yes, we, yes, that's what we did. I even forgot what they said to you know, send the, that we can, we didn't have to stand alert any longer. And the, like the closing, we had sit around a campfire sort of deal and sing the guide song. And there was a few others that I just don't really, you know, I'd get mixed up if I start talking about them because they were so, they weren't used that often. They were used on certain occasions, I think.
What, did you enjoy the rituals?
Well, the only one I liked, I guess, because we had guides only once a week, and I liked the horseshoe formation deal. I mean, the beginning of the guides. I don't know, then I'd sort of, you know, lose out. If, mind you, if it was, if I knew we were to go out into the bush and that right after the call party, then I wouldn't mind it. But if we had to sit into the house and start mending or something, I didn't have that much interest. As long as we had, well, I was a leader then, and you'd have, well, after the call party, we had to inspect our groups, see that everything was all right, and we had a book to check,
mm-hmm.
you know, their uniforms and that sort of thing. And And then we had to give them their work, pass out their work, and see that they were, how they were doing. And I wasn't very good with mending, but I had to sort of tell them what to do. And I don't think my job was any better than theirs. But, you know, we had, being the leader, you have a sort of responsibility for them.
Did you go on campouts too?
Well, we did in the spring. We went out, they call this, I don't know if it was the field day or the guides day. But we went out for 3 days on a camping trip, and we had to do everything ourselves. You know, like we pitched our own tents, made our own fire. We had our own group. You'd the leader and your own group. Well, we had gone with the Anglican girl guide. I don't know if it's the second pack or the.
I have those numbers sometimes.
Yeah, and we had gone out with them, so. It was quite a group, you know, mind you.
Where'd you go?
We went out to the airport lake, and it was about the time where there was no mosquitoes, and yet it was warm. And I don't know what was the idea, but we weren't to have any radios or anything with us. You know, we couldn't have anything musical. And we had to be on our feet doing something all day. First day we got there, well, we had to pitch our tent and have supper and go to sleep. Well, we sat around a campfire and did as we please after supper. The next day, then, we ended up having to build our basin stands, our fireplace, and make a little table to eat on, and, you know, these sort of things were, it was nice, and I really enjoyed it. I mind you, we were busy a lot,
mm-hmm.
but I really enjoyed it. And then in the evenings, we had a sit around a campfire and sing girl guide songs or do as we please. We can go in and read then.
You don't need a table to eat off, but to cook, to prepare the food?
Yes, to prepare the food. Well, we built a table to eat on.
You wouldn't have benches, would you?
No, we had benches, but we never used the table. What we did was we just made had a tablecloth spread out on the ground, you know, and we'd have a whole line of tablecloth spread out, and we can all eat together on the ground.
I ask you about it because it seems to me it's a pretty popular activity, the girl guides, and quite a few girls in Inuvik are in it.
Yeah, well, when I was in a hostel, the first year, I know everybody, oh my, they must have had over, you know, just in one pack, like we were the second Inuvik pack, and yeah, that's right, come to think of, we were.
They'd be first.
Mm-hmm. And we had, the first year, I think we said we had over 46 guides in our pack. So that was a good number, just from the Grolier Hall hostel. You know, it's not from any from town and that.
It was all voluntary?
Yes, it was. We just, you know, they just asked if whoever wants to sign up in Girl Guide, sign your name here. And so we ended up with 46. And I think it was something about around 36 on the other team, other group pack. I don't know if this was that must have been the first Girl Guide pack from the Anglican hostel. And we got together, you know, trying to find out who had more Girl Guides, and they said they had 36 the first year. And I think it stayed pretty high on their side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. As I left the hostel, I don't know about the Girl Guides there anymore. But for the first 2 years I was there, they seemed to slacken down a bit, because while it was the same children coming back every year, and they were growing older. By the time the second year, one of them may be, you know, about 16, 17, and they start losing interest in the Girl Guides, so they started dropping out, and we had just gone down to less.
Did they supply the uniforms, or did you have to buy them?
No, they supplied everything.
On loan?
Yes.
You didn't keep it after you left?
No, we didn't keep the... Well, mind you, we kept all our books, Girl Guide books,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. Excuse me.
Did anybody ever approach you since then, now that you're a matron, a young matron in Inuvik, to be a leader?
Well, the first year James and I was married, they were asking for Girl Guides leaders, and I had went up and volunteered to be a leader. And I went, and that while I didn't want to be a Girl Guide leader, I said that I figured I was too young. Because
mm-hmm.
She said that from the age, ranging from the age of 16 and under, and I figured... No, these were the Girl
Children.
Guides, yes. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be 18, 19 and give orders to a 16-year-old, she'd probably turn around and tell me right off, especially if she's a bigger person, you know. So I told them that I'd taken with brownies. Being a Girl Guide leader, then you can be a brownie leader. So she said it was fine and dandy, and I went to... Well, what I did was I just volunteered for a spectator. I mean, a substitutor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went on for about 3 meetings, and then they finally had found someone that can do the job, you know, the year round. So she said she'll keep me in mind every time anybody was missing out, then
you
I can go.
You didn't want to go on as a permanent?
Well, I had planned to, and then I thought, well, gee, if I'm going to go on a permanent, and James being away so much, out working, what am I going to do when I have to walk to the meetings in the dark from down here? And I, you know, I thought, not like if I'm on them substituting, then it wouldn't as if I wouldn't be as if I had to go every certain nights, you know. But and then he said, well, he's being away so much, it'd be kind of dangerous for me to have to walk to the meetings alone, because the meetings start at 8 o'clock in the evening usually.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, in that case, then I'll just be a substitute, and which I did. And I enjoyed it, and they called me back, I think, once or twice after that.
Mm-hmm.
But after they found a leader, their full permanent leaders, then they didn't bother too much.
I'm not sure I know what dangers.
Well,
there are.
There's always drunkards.
Oh.
One thing I can say, if you're passing one, he don't like the way you act toward him, he'll start a fight, and, you know, swearing. And then there's dogs.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, I think it's one of the worst dangers, dogs, because there's always loose dogs around here, and there was no lights, there was no houses then.
Mm-hmm.
There was only 3 tents down here. Well, there was a lot of tents, but there was just 3 tents that had someone living in them. There was Elizabeth, Firth, and I, and Betty Frost. So it was so isolated down here. And I thought, well, gee, if I have to walk through this place being so isolated, I don't know what I'll do. And there wasn't even street lights. And you didn't get a street light till you get in front of Semler's.
Yeah.
So I told James, he used to walk me when he was in. He'd walk with me up there. But after that, he said,
I'd meet you again afterwards.
Yes, he'd come up and pick me up. Well, he usually hung around Semler's, you know. Around 10, he'd be around Semler's. From there...
Yeah, that's where you had to land.
Is the cold considered a danger in itself?
No, you didn't think of the cold. It wasn't that for me. It was just the idea of the dogs and the drunkards. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was scared of them more than anything else.
What year are we talking about now?
That was in 1962, about that.
So I can keep all these things straight if I play them back to... Well, we didn't interrupt anything you were talking about. How we get on the guides? Doesn't matter. Could you tell us something about the people who have been, while you've been in the Inuvik, who have been leaders in community affairs, people who have taken...
You mean among the natives?
People you know as having been in leading roles in this community.
About the only one I can name is, I guess, Jim Cooey, Bertha Allen, and Victor, Billy Day.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they're still leaders? Are they still active in this way?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think that Jim Cooey used to be president of the Ingamo Hall.
Oh, he was?
I'm not sure, but I figured he was, or he was something to do with the Ingamo Hall, because the announcements that went on the radio used to be from Jim Cooey, you know. And Bertha and her husband, well, they had something to do with it, but I didn't pay much attention because I never bothered with the Ingamo. I never even went to the dances.
You weren't a member?
No, I just had no interest. I don't know why, but I haven't even been in the Ingamo Hall yet. So I don't even know where the Ingamo Hall is anymore. And I heard today, you know, the announcement on the radio that the babies were going to have their clinic there. And I just thought, well, where in the world am I going to find Ingamo Hall now? And as for Billy Day, I heard he was president of the Eskimo Drum Dancers that were taken out to Edmonton. That is about all I would know about volunteers, you know, helping and committee openings like that. Mind you, not around down here, there isn't anybody. If someone came and asked me, you know, would you do this and join a committee, well, I'd say yes. You know, I'm willing to, but if it's at a certain circumstance that I can do it, then I would do it. But otherwise, I wouldn't go and jump, put my nose in it. I don't know. I'm just not interested enough to put my nose into anything. But yet, if someone came over and asked me to volunteer, then I, you know, wouldn't say no if I can do it.
You never thought of yourself as having ideas that you would like to see accomplished in Inuvik?
Oh, yes, I have. You know, I'm like for the way... One thing I can say is that I'm so strictly against government and the, you know, the way the government treats certain. I don't know. It's just my attitude toward them. I mean, like the white people comes into this country and they get these apartments, and everything, you know, just about might as well say for nothing. Where we end up with a house that's freezing all winter and roasting in the summer, sort of thing, and the. Yet I think that if the natives can handle a job and hang on to it, then they have a right to an apartment. You know, they should have an apartment because this is their home, the natives. If it wasn't for the natives, I think a lot of times there'd be very few white men coming down here to explore and living down here. So that there are certain things, you know, I'd like to see be done. Like I'd love to see a white man, a native get an apartment. Mind you, they are getting in certain places, like the NCPC are giving their men apartments. But before that, I heard a rumor. I don't know how true it is, but I was staying at the apartments at the time, and someone said that Doug Cameron and Mr. McKenna said that they'll never, never let a native move into an apartment. It's just as well letting a dog move in. You know, and I felt so depressed when I heard that, and I just turned around to this white woman, you know, and I told her, look here, I said, if it wasn't for the natives, I don't think you'd be sitting here right today. That is where I'd like to. Another thing is I'd like to move that hospital very, very much, because, and move the liquor store to the hospital area. Because, you know, this is nonsense. Where do they put the liquor store? Useless thing. They go and shove it right in the middle of the town. And where they put the hospital, where we can use, you know, it's a useful thing. And they go and shove it way in the other end of town. And, you know, we have to struggle up there to get up there. If a person hasn't got money, then he's got to walk. And if he's late for his appointment, then he can't get in to the doctor. So I think this is terrible. I wouldn't mind changing if I had a chance to. Someone asked me if I can have a wish, and I'd tell them those two are my wishes. So there is a certain things I'd like to see in Inuvik changed. I mean, I don't agree with certain circumstances, the way they treat. It's not only the way they treat people. It's just the way that the government thinks, I think.
Let me, for the sake of discussion, take the side of the government, just a second.